The Way of Will John.
Benny the Irish Polyglot. My friend, what's up, man? How are you?
How's it going? Good to be talking to you.
Yeah, man. It's good. Wait a second. Where in Ireland are you from, first off?
I like to specify it by saying I'm from the arsehole end of nowhere. Whenever okay. people try to imagine Ireland, because that's effectively from their perspective where it is. But it's a sweet town called Cavan, 2 hours northwest of Dublin.
Okay. So, because in maybe 2015, was it maybe 2015? I'm not sure now. I was on trial, came to an agreement with Shamrock Rovers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know them. Mm-hmm. Football. I don't know. Are you into football?
Very, very superficially. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Superficially. Like World Cup.
Yeah.
Ireland? Are we
yeah,
in?
Pretty no? much.
Yeah. Okay.
And Ireland's okay, well, never in the World Cup. So it's always supporting someone else.
Do you know your most famous player?
That's where you got me. That's where my ignorance starts to shine.
Okay. Probably Robbie Keane. He played in the US, that's why. But in any case, I was or Roy Keane. Is Roy Keane Irish? Oh, they're gonna kill me in the comments. But so I was there and we came to an agreement, everything was cool, and I left to go start the process of the paperwork and all the nonsense that one has to do. And then it kind of fizzled out. They ended up signing, because it was going to cost them less money, some little kid, you know, like a kid, right? And then a couple years later, we ended up playing them in what's called the Europa League. It's like it's a tournament. So if your team does really well in European football, you get to play teams from other, you know, other genres.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really a weird thing, because I loved it while I was there in Dublin. I thought it was... It's so green. People are cool. Dublin's way more different than, you know, you would imagine. It's much bigger than I thought, you know. But anyway, what's up with you? Where are you now?
Right now, I am in New Jersey. Not super exciting, but I'm kind of gearing myself up for getting back on the road. I had been 16 consecutive years of nonstop travel. And the last, I want to say, 3 years, I've been kind of settled in the New York, New Jersey area. And now I'm back into intensive language learning. I've got a very intensive schedule each week. And I think once it's safe to do so, I'll be back on the road again.
Okay. So let's just get straight into some of the more grit stuff. I've known about you for a very long time. I don't know how long. Now, it's been years, well before there was a book. It was early on. Let me just say this. I'm one of the early followers. I had on an acquaintance friend of yours, Scott Young,
mm-hmm.
to get on to talk about learning and stuff like that. It was really cool to talk about all sorts of things. As far as language stuff, now I speak a little bit. I speak a few languages, and we get the question all the time, obviously. How do you learn? How do you do this? What's the best way? So I know you have all sorts of other stories and stuff like that, but I feel as the questions that came in beforehand were all about how can I do this, which is probably a question you have had to answer a whole bunch, but you're kind of an expert in that field. So I want to kick it over to you just for the people that kind of want to have a dip in, maybe they're a little worried, maybe, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in case people don't know my background, one of the most important things that it is important to be aware of is you might see me as an accomplished polyglot, but in my 20s, I could only speak English. That's my starting point. I was not naturally talented in languages. I studied electronic engineering. I consider tech to be where my heart truly lies. And I moved to Spain and lived there for 6 months, and I didn't learn any Spanish in those first 6 months. So that's very important to get out of the bat, because it's very tempting to decide that somebody who speaks a bunch of languages does so because they're just naturally talented. It's just they're born with this gene. I did very poorly in German in school, the language that I studied, and I did not successfully learn Spanish in those first 6 months. So what changed was after having exposure to not just my own failed attempts, but seeing other people successfully learn Spanish who had just arrived, and they were also engineers like myself, because I was part of a work exchange program. I would ask them, what are you doing that's making you successfully learn the language? And it did take a while to sink in. They were telling me effectively what the right answer was, and I didn't want to hear it. I wanted to hear that they had some special cassette tape they were listening to, because people used cassettes back then. That's how far ago it was, that they were listening to while they slept, or that they used a specific book that magically solved all their problems.
Right.
And
exactly.
Eventually, it sunk in. What they were actually telling me is that they're just genuinely trying to speak the language. And that's what I was not doing. I was trying to study the language. I was trying to learn the language. I was never trying to use the language. And the biggest lesson by far that I've learned is to embrace making mistakes. When you think of an accomplished polyglot, it's just not congruent in a lot of people's minds. They imagine someone who's effectively a genius. So it's just not congruent with the idea that you actually have to embrace being a complete moron. And this is my greatest skill, that I'm okay with sounding like an idiot. I'm okay exactly. with speaking like Tarzan, you know?
Yeah, no, that's actually, and as a matter of fact, that was the exact, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but the exact answer. I just did a video with someone who's an American who moved to Sweden, who speaks now Swedish in all his YouTube videos. And he's, you know, become kind of a little local celebrity, you know, because he speaks with a very thick accent. However, same thing as we got to speaking about it. Well, how did you get to the, you know what? I just don't care. I don't care how I sound. I don't care at the beginning. I look ridiculous. I don't mind having to have that little few minutes of struggle going through that. Because, you know, the truth is that when you get into a type of, I need to learn and use this, which is my biggest, I guess you could call it, not really a pet peeve, annoyance with the school system and studying these grammar and studying through. None of my friends speak Spanish either. They've all taken like 6 or 7 years. I can't imagine spending that much time doing something and then coming out with absolutely almost nothing. And it just doesn't make any sense to me how that's the case. But yeah, just to your point, there's no way around this. You've got to enjoy it. I enjoy making mistakes, being whatever. And, you know, people are kind of maybe afraid of getting critiqued or what it feels like, you know, to do that. And I know that holds a lot of people back. I know it does. That's something people say. I don't want to do that. I want to try and do this. So maybe more specifically, maybe you can mention what are your active languages? What are the things that you actually have done? I think guys would love, you know, to hear about that.
Yeah. So I have a little calendar here. You can just barely make it out, that effectively reminds me the languages I've got on which day of the week. So I switch between them. I try to use at least 4 or 5 hours. Keep in mind, this is where I'm at in maintenance mode. This is not something I suggest people start off with. Like, you want to become a polyglot? The way to do that is not to have Monday be your Spanish day, Tuesday be your Portuguese day. Absolutely not. But I'm currently in maintenance mode. It's something I like to do between my projects. So maybe next year I learn a new language, and then I'll have to accept that my current languages might suffer a little and go down slightly while I'm not focused on them. But for the moment, I would say I'm actively learning and maintaining my German, French, Irish, Mandarin, Spanish, Portuguese, Italian, and American Sign Language.
And wow.
I would have all of those in a broad range. So for instance, my Irish, that's Gaelic for people who wouldn't know of it, and my Mandarin would be at the lower intermediate level, which specifically means I can have lots of conversations as long as the person I'm speaking to is patient. But then a few would be at the fluent level. So my Italian and German are definitely fluent. I can have conversations about pretty much anything, and I still make the odd mistake and such, but I don't need the other person to slow down. They don't need to use like simplified words. Whereas the likes of my Spanish would be at the C2 mastery level. I've got a diploma of mastery in Spanish. I've worked as an electronic engineer in Spanish. So you have this big range, but effectively those are the languages that I'm actively using nowadays.
Yeah, that's incredible. And definitely, I would imagine most polyglots would agree with you. When you get to a certain level, there's a different type of study required. Maintenance mode is necessary in order to maintain the amount of things that are going on in your head. One of the most interesting things that I've just come upon, well, and I do have a question for you about what the beginner should do. However, I do a lot of yoga. So, you know, I, as a professional soccer player, I've got to stay fit and do all this other stuff, do a bunch of yoga. I have no idea why, for the life of me, I have not been doing yoga in other languages. It just dawned on me that I could open up a whole new world. And that's one of the cool things about being a polyglot and wanting to learn so much more. You have to solve problems in ways. Well, how are you going to keep adding on? There's no infinite level or there's no infinite amount of time, you know, so I've got to learn how to practice these or fashion them into the business in some way where you have people that speak those languages and I'm doing it with them or whatever it is. So my question actually becomes twofold. First one, you're in maintenance mode. What about at beginning stage? What? Because I know so many people here are going to be inspired by everything that you just said. They're going to want to go dip in and do it. Well, how? Day one, what do I study? Do I listen to this? Do I read this? What have you found by doing all this, you know?
Well, effectively, you'll get lots of varied answers to this. And a lot of people think that if I was to say, do you know what, this is the perfect book, that's the one that they just have to go out and buy. And if they don't, then they'll fail. And it doesn't work like that. There aren't perfect resources. I mean, obviously, other than the books that I've written, which are obviously the ones everyone has to buy.
Which are great.
Yeah. Shout out. But obviously, you know, you don't have to buy any specific resource. But what I do highly recommend for everybody, because generally there are exceptions. There are people who are passionate about reading a language. But as a rule, I think most people want to have conversations. They want to be able to interact with native speakers. So as counterintuitive as this sounds, especially coming from an academic mindset where you have to prepare for a long time before you're ready to speak, my counterintuitive advice is you need to speak from day one. This is my mantra when it comes to starting a language. I know it sounds impossible, but I've tried this multiple times myself with languages I don't have anything in common with, where I have just tried to learn a handful of words. And it, like, effectively what I do is I book a session with a teacher on day one. And the plan is, the only rule is I'm not allowed to use English with that teacher. And it sounds crazy, but you can, people can look up. I demonstrated this with Polish, for instance, where I tried to cram a bunch of Polish in ahead of calling somebody. And effectively, the way I made it work was cheating. On day one, I made sure I could say, could you write that out? And the person I was talking to in Polish would say, blah, 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 blah. And I wouldn't understand what they said. And then I would say, could you write that out? And they would type it into the chat window and I would copy and paste it into Google Translate. And that way I was getting this giant crutch that it was at least was helping me to understand what they say. And then I would type what I want to say into Google Translate. Now, having said that, I am not saying Google Translate is the tool to use. This just happened to be an effective way for me at that very, very beginning stage to avoid using English with some mechanism to help me. I've also just avoided that kind of tool by just using a dictionary, looking up the words, and speaking caveman version of the language. Me want go supermarket. That's fine. People understand that. You can make progress with that. And it's an overlooked aspect of language learning to kind of embrace this beginner stage, because the goal is everybody wants to have these, you know, Kantian epistemological debates in the language. That's great. But so, you know what? Maybe just start by saying my name is. And when you get that conversation, you can be very proud of that. And I have been proud of those conversations, those initial ones. And I'm okay with being a beginner. I'm not constantly kicking myself when I compare myself to other learners who are at the intermediate stage or they're at the fluent stage and thinking, oh, I'm such a moron. I'm not there. I just accept I'm a beginner right now. This is what I'm going to work on. This is my world. And the only person I need to compare myself with is me from yesterday. Am I sucking a little less compared to yesterday? And that's the only goal.
Yeah. Which is actually great advice for other parts of life as well. It sounds almost identical to the stuff that I'll tell kids when training, because it applies perfectly. Everybody wants to be Cristiano Ronaldo. Everyone wants to be Messi, Pele, whatever, you name it. They sucked the very first time they kicked a ball. If we have the video of each one, it was awful. And same with languages. It's going to be bad. Enjoy it. It's actually pretty fun. I mean, yes, there's all sorts of things. There's nothing better. At the beginning, you know, when moving to Denmark, Danish is very glottal. I don't know if Danish is on your list. But it's just ridiculous. You get there and you're just, how am I going to pronounce that? It sounds, it all comes from back here, you know. And then as a beginner, you kind of, you hit a bunch of stages. I don't even know if I can catch me. See, tell me if I'm on to something here. First, you get that first initial, that first time when you are like maybe not using Google, something like this, and you understand a conversation or something like that. That's like this huge win, you know, when you've been able to do that. And then maybe you see, you're starting to understand maybe something on the TV or something like that, or you throw together a few sentences. And probably one of the most fun things is when you don't know that you know how to say something and it comes out. And that's just like, and that comes, those are all early fun things. And yes, it's great by the end, you know, after 3 months or 2 months or however long, and you've got, you know, you're able to string some stuff together. But those little wins cannot be underrated. It's so fun. And obviously, it's great when you get to the end. But I just, you know, so then obviously, yeah. So you're all about, in a sense, immersion. I just want to go back to one point that you said, which was to forget about English or forget about your mother tongue or whatever you're going to lean on as a crutch and start in that other language. What are your thoughts then on, you must have heard of TPRS.
What does it stand for?
Teaching proficiency through storytelling.
Okay.
I could be making that whole thing up, but it's more about comprehensible input.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the essential idea behind it is obviously the same thing. However, I've noticed that it's being used a bit more in schooling, where they're teaching kids, instead of having normal Spanish class where you sit there and figure out, oh my God, yo, tú, usted, and just that whole ridiculous chart that in the end they take the test and you forget it. They're starting to start day one with, they'll put some things up on a board. They'll tell you a story in the same way you would tell a child a story, and they'll kind of interact. And so they'll ask and they'll give you cues to what's going to happen. And I've seen people adapt this into, I've seen tutors that are using this. I've seen classes, online classes that utilize this. And what it does is almost the exact same thing that you're saying, which is you got to start, because if you don't, then you're going to get stuck, you know? So you haven't heard of that.
Oh, I definitely know of the story method. I just wouldn't know that particular way of referring to it. And I have a few friends who are very much, that's kind of the core of their learning philosophy. And it's based on comprehensible input, of course, but that you begin with baseline stories. And I like that also because it veers away from the academic approach that's way more obsessed with grammar. And this is what the baggage that a lot of us have when we get into language learning is, that's the context around it. And we think, if I misconjugate this verb, I failed and I'm not good at this language. And I'm telling people to just use the caveman version. And with stories, the goal is to get the gist of it. You're not supposed to know every single word and everything that's come across. It's the stories are presented in a way that you can understand as much as possible and that you're learning a little bit each time. And that's effectively the comprehensible input version of what I'm talking about, that you're just trying to learn something every day and to expand upon that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think which is cool. And it's obviously a way that will not drive you insane. But so what's the overall goal here? Where are we going to? Where's Benny 60, 75? Where's Benny at 100? Is he just like, I've taken over the world, I speak everything, I've included, you know, I have some crazy questions that I want to get into. But do you have kind of an aim at where you're headed? Are you selective with the languages, etc.?
Yeah, you know? So it's funny because being a polyglot was never my aim. And I'm ironically, even though I have like the world's largest language learning blog, I publish books on language learning, I actually, to be completely honest, don't care about learning languages. I really don't care about learning languages. My interest lies in getting to know people from other cultures. So the language is a means to an end. The language is a tool that helps me open the door to making these friends. So that's why I don't necessarily think to myself, oh, in 20 years, I want to have 20 languages under my belt. Or, you know, I can't wait to get my teeth into some obscure language or some dead language. Like that, that may well happen if I have motivation for it. Like Irish, for instance, is not a very commonly spoken language. It's a less useful language than a lot of languages you could propose. But of course, culturally, it's very important to me, and it's very important for me to get to know my own background. And there have been other smaller languages that I've dabbled in. I even actually forgot to, since I'm not actively maintaining it, another language is, I would say is definitely on my fluent list is Esperanto. And that's a language that very few people would care about, and a lot of people would be cynical about. But I happen to enjoy the Esperanto gatherings. There are like gatherings every summer that people just make this mini Esperanto town effectively out of nothing. Yeah. And I have fun with that. So that for me makes the language useful for that reason. And the likes of like my favorite language is probably Portuguese, because I love spending time in Brazil. People might think, oh, it's because it has the future subjunctive. No, it isn't. You know, it's never because of that stuff. And that's kind of what it comes down to for me is, if we're talking about where I see myself in 20 years time, I don't know if like I've taken a fairly long break from travel recently, and I'm definitely ready to get back into it sometime next year. And I think the break was good because I was starting to get tapped out. But I think if I'm able to maintain this rhythm of traveling intensively for a few years, taking a break and then traveling again, then I just want to explore the world. I want to say I have true friendships with people who don't need to use English, like, because English is great. You'll meet lots of friends through the language, but it's limiting you, that you're only going to see this slice of a culture, especially with a lot of countries that don't master English very well, that you're just going to see the rich people who work in the tourism industry. And I want to see other parts of the country, you know? And that's what it comes down to for me. That's where my goals have always been for the entire history of my travels. And, you know, people would say, why don't you learn this language next? And they would give me a random language, because there's 5,000 languages. So I'm never going to learn all of them. There's always going to be a language I haven't learned. And what I need more than anything is to get inspired to visit that country. And maybe I'll meet somebody who's traveled to my country, and I'll meet them and talk to them, and they'll expose me to their culture. Like, for the longest time, I didn't really care much about learning Mandarin or Chinese. I just didn't have a true passion for the idea of going to China. But while I was in Chicago once, I bumped into a group of Taiwanese, and I was saying, oh no, I don't want to go live in China because, you know, they block internet, and I am a YouTuber and whatever. And they're like, you need to come to Taiwan. We have one of the freest presses in the world. We are a very open, modern country. And they completely sold me on the idea. And using Mandarin in Taiwan was suddenly extremely interesting to me. And that inspired me to go and spend time in that country. So that's what it comes down to, is I want to get to know people, and a language is a resource for that. And I think that helps me become a polyglot in my own way. Because if I was a perfectionist, if I truly cared about just the language and I wanted to know the language itself inside and out and never make mistakes and know about advanced grammar and obscure vocabulary, that would actually slow me down, because I'd be second guessing myself. And even if I've reached a mastery level in a language like Spanish, I've gotten there because I was not really caring about the language. It was just the tool that constantly helped me get to know people better and better.
That's so, so interesting, because it actually, it reminds me a bit of my story behind why. I mean, and you wanted to do it because it opens up worlds for you. And that is the thing that I didn't know. I don't know how you fell and came upon that, but this is, you know, I have played professional football in many countries. And I don't know why I'm so Danish influenced, but I can remember when I got to Denmark and I got to the club, many of the players, many foreigners we had from Brazil, Africa, France, and all this stuff, they couldn't speak English. Obviously, Scandinavia, they speak excellent English over here. It's ridiculous. Now, I already spoke English, and the other American on the team, he already spoke English. But I went to the director, and I said, I want to learn Danish. And he goes, why? I go, it would be awesome. So I made him, they had a tutor, they got an English tutor for all them. She had to then, afterwards, teach me Danish. And he was just like, why are you doing? You already speak English. There's no need for it. But it opened up mountains of worlds. One of my favorite series of all time is in Danish. They're never going to make that show in English for me, for an American view. They don't care. It's and it immersed you in the culture. I got to know everything, you know, so much. I just wouldn't know or understand. And so when I was probably 16, 15, something like this, we read Count of Monte Cristo. I'm not sure if you if you know that book.
Yeah.
But the main character, obviously, he gets locked in jail unjustly and ends up meeting an old man who ends up teaching him tons of things about life. He taught him a bunch of different languages and how to do things in science and math, etc., and how to travel the world and things like that would be helpful. Well, that just stuck in my head. And I got something, it gave me the bug, and somewhere in that place, I got the idea that it would be really cool if, and I just said a random number, 10. I was like, that'd be really cool if I could do 10. Well, now I'm conversationally fluent in 8. And I'm thinking, it hasn't really been that long. And the goal, obviously, stopped being about the number forever ago. That was just a childhood thing, like, oh, that might be kind of cool, you know, and I kind of think about it from time to time. What this has opened up to me is a feeling of I can travel virtually anywhere and almost feel at home. I feel as if the world is my home. I don't feel like I have to, you know, stay in this little area. These aren't my people. I just feel like I can go there. I'll learn some stuff. I'll learn some words. I'll listen to stuff. We'll start being cool. I'll find somebody. And one of the most amazing things about the whole thing is that when you travel the world, all these people I've met, I count on the generosity and the genuine honesty and love of strangers so much more than I would if I just stayed in my country, spoke my language, and looked at everybody else as the outsider. So that's just this kind of an outside thing. I don't know if you've had the same experience. I'm probably sure traveling around the world, you probably got some crazy ideas or just experiences, you know, not to mention I was stranded when I got to Egypt once, Cairo, and I don't speak Arabic. Have you gone down the Arabic train yet?
I have. I haven't maintained it, but I definitely was in Egypt, learned some Egyptian Arabic.
Oh, I remember seeing some stuff, actually. I got there. I couldn't speak. I was waiting for, it was the middle of the night. I was trying to, my agent hadn't come to pick me up. He'd lost his phone. Something happened. Group of guys were the only people there. And I walked up to him and I just said, you know, hey, can I like use a phone? I don't remember. This is years ago. Can I use your phone? It was at that point. They didn't understand anything. I thought, you know what? Let me try some Spanish. Nothing. Let me try some German. Nothing. I don't know what else I could speak at the time. I just thought, hey, any of you guys speak Italian? I said in Italian, you know, someone, you know, speak Italian. And one guy spoke Italian. They ended up taking me where I needed to go, feeding me, doing all this stuff, all because we just happened to be able to communicate. So it's just a small thing. And I just, I wish it was more entrenched in American culture. I wish, that's just me. You're over there right now. I don't know how you feel about it, but what have you felt going around the world? What do you, you know, what's the kind of the craziest thing that's happened to you because of all this?
I mean, when you travel, things definitely start getting unpredictable. And like you said, the best stories are like that one where something went wrong and that led to a more interesting interaction. And one of my most fond memories, for instance, also along the lines of Italian, I was supposed to be going to an event in East Italy, but it was hit by an earthquake, and it kind of was a very serious one, and the whole area, it was impossible to go to. And it was intentionally going to happen around Easter, and I was taking a whole week around Easter to break in this eastern part of Italy, and that had to be cancelled immediately. And Easter in Italy is a very crazy time to be there. Like, I would not plan to go otherwise. But a friend of mine in Rome said that, because I helped him out while he was in Spain, he was like, Benny, come stay with me. Have Easter dinner with my family. And I ate with like four generations of Italian. And it was so funny because they were speaking like, Roman dialect. And Romano. And then my friend would translate to Italian for me, which is very, very funny. And like I just remember talking to his grandmother and like feeling like I'm just in this absolutely amazing experience that there's just no way that I would have been able to do this with just English, you know? Like, even though he would be translating the odd thing to Italian, I could still follow, for the most part, a lot of the other things that they were saying, and I could be a participant in this family event. And of course, there's a million stories that happen like that, when something, just a challenge might have come up, and using the language gave me an extra leg up. When I was in Rio, for instance, I managed to get, for the equivalent of probably $200 or $300 a month, a penthouse apartment with a 270-degree panoramic view that included the Statue of Christ, the very important, famous symbol in Rio, and the Sugarloaf Mountain, a second very famous symbol of Rio. And I could see all of it from my bed. And I got this place because I went to check it out. I found it on like a Brazilian ad. And obviously, if you look it up on Airbnb, it would have been like, you know, incredibly expensive.
Insane.
And because I knew a bit about Brazilian culture, the sweet lady, like the 70-year-old lady who was showing me around, I kind of did a weird Latin flirty thing with her. I was like, you know, I thought I was going to meet somebody 70. Is your mother coming sometime soon? Just this silly kind of thing. In a really Brazilian way that made her laugh, and that kind of, endeared her. And because of that, she was like, okay, the place is yours. You seem like a nice guy. And that kind of stuff, that these life experiences that I just can't even begin to fathom how I would have them just through English. And living in America, I can understand the perspective of, just wanting to use English and not being open to that. I understand where that's coming from. When you're in such a big country, it can feel like English is the world. And I get it, but I'm hoping more and more people, once it's safe to do so, will be getting into travel mode and exploring more countries. And until then, you can actually get quite decent exposure to the world through online means. So this weekly schedule I showed you, that I'm going through different days, I kind of feel like I'm doing this virtual travel every day. And because I'm in French mode, like, one thing I've literally done is I use an app on my phone to change my GPS location to France. And because of that, the algorithms and apps like Instagram and TikTok and whatever will actually show me content from those countries. And as well as that, my operating system's in French. And like you were saying at the start that you just realized you could do yoga in the languages. I used the app Headspace this morning. And I set it to French. And I got my prompts to meditate, to start my day with a clear head, in French. So even though I'm stuck in my apartment in cloudy New Jersey, which is definitely not an exciting place to be, I bring the whole world to me, and I get to have this mini virtual experience. And later today, I'll be having a conversation with a lady, my teacher, who's going to be grilling me on very intense, because French is one of my better languages. So when I have lessons, I make sure they're very difficult lessons to really push me you know, talking about difficult political, geopolitical events and whatever. And I like that. And it's funny because I think of like a Zoom call I might have in English because I get lazy. It's more like, so how's quarantine going? You know, yeah, same old, same old. Whereas I'm having like debates about the meaning of what it is to be truly free. And, you know, these kind of really deeper conversations, because it's driving me to try to have those to expand my language skills. And it's also, it's very humbling when you get into language learning. And no matter how many languages I learn, when I start the next one, I'm going to suck. Doesn't matter if I have advanced French. Whenever I get around to the likes of Korean, I'm going to be a beginner, and I'm going to have those beginner conversations. And any chance for my ego to expand and think, you know, oh, I'm a die, that it's just so great, that kind of gets knocked down a notch, and you have to humbly climb your way back up again. But then when you do, it's so worth it, and you'll get to have these experiences and see a side of the world you never would have otherwise.
Yeah, no, it's impossible to you know, to truly quantify what it seems that you really get out of just learning even one language. I mean, we're talking about a whole bunch for your ability to travel around. By the way, since you mentioned Rome, have you seen La Suburra? The series? Never?
No.
On Netflix? Well, if you like Roman Italian, or sorry, yes, Romano. Yeah.
Si
dice Romano. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Check that out. It's really interesting. It's quite famous. And I just wanted to mention for people that also might even be thinking about the times, well, I can't travel, Benny, so I can't learn that language. I don't know what you're asking me to do at the moment. I just properly went to Italy this past year.
Mm-hmm.
And I had loved the language and been able to speak the language for forever before. I mean, I don't know, years. I started back, it piqued my interest like in college. And I would go, I've told this story on, I think even in the very first podcast, my academic advisor in college did not want me to study Spanish and Italian at the same time. She said, people don't do that. That's not good. Well, I've been taking Spanish for a while. I actually can converse in Spanish. I'm not like, you know, it won't be a problem. These romance languages are blah, not having it. So she made me take this other math class. Well, I just, at the time, I didn't have any appreciation for math at that time, which I do now. So I just studied Italian in class. I just didn't care. But I think it's really interesting the fact that this idea and how you're pushing yourself draws from what I truly understand from people that are trying to master something, and not even just master, but that enjoy this sort of self-learning thing. You're so driven. There's no need for you to push yourself to that next top level in French, in which case you're not even sure when you're going to use it probably, but it's something that you know needs to happen. And to the point of obviously switching and changing your IP address to, you know, to France or wherever, and change. I have my, so Siri for me is in Italian. A lot of my different settings are in German and stuff like that. And just because I'm at the level now where I can handle it. I've seen this, you know, I'm not entirely, this is, to be honest, this week has actually been my first true public dive into the polyglot world, as I've spoken different languages many times on YouTube and stuff like that, but I've never engaged with the community. It's just been kind of me and everything that it comes with it. I see people kind of, when they hear immersion, they do this, like on day one, instead of you having a little cheat code in Polish where you can know how to say something, they'll change everything to some language that they don't understand, even if the script is different, thinking that that's immersion. Then they'll listen to things that are well above their ability to understand and think, how come I'm not getting better? Well, you're listening to gibberish all day with no context, no clues, no nothing. And so there's this ability for some people to kind of think that that's what immersion is. And yes, you will have those moments. It's true. If you go to another country, it will be overwhelming, especially if they don't speak any English. But I think it's really important to know that those first steps of chunking something down make the language manageable. You know, I'm not sure in your books, do you go through a very first kind of that step? I know you've talked about, okay, talking first. And even though, do you have what you would consider the Benny method? Do you have your own thing? If you were going to, do you speak any Eastern European languages? Any Slavic?
I learned some Czech. And like I said, I dabbled in Polish. But I wouldn't say that I conversationally speak. Yeah.
Interesting. So you haven't, no Russia. Russia's not on your thing. That's a big one for most polyglots.
No, not yet. But the thing is, I take my time. I've lived in Brazil for a whole year, lived in Spain for a year and a half. And, you know, I do plan to, because I haven't explored Eastern Europe properly. So when I do it, I want to do it properly. And I will dedicate serious time to learning a language. My book just came out in Ukrainian, so I'm kind of tempted to make that one the first one, but that wouldn't be for another year, because I do take things as slowly as, like, even though I have my intensity of 3 months, obviously I take things very slowly whenever possible. And right this year I'm just in maintenance mode, and then maybe next year will be the time for me to check out Eastern Europe. And if not the year after or the year after that, I'm doing this nice and slow.
Exactly. Yeah. No. Yeah. To have a good understanding of the patience that's necessary is huge too. I don't know as well what my next and new. It kind of plays on to with football, and I have picked up a slight interest in Chinese. I find it kind of cool. I don't know any other Asian languages, so it's good to be dumb, as we spoke about. But I'm also attracted to some of the dialects now. I see myself being attracted. Like I've had discussions with my Italian friends who can never agree on anything, obviously, because I'll say, which dialect should I learn? And the Sicilians will obviously give me every reason to learn Sicilian, and so on and so forth. But I think that would be fun, because where I'm going with this is, you speak American Sign Language.
Mm-hmm. Well, I sign.
I'm sorry to say sign. Sign. That's ridiculous sounding. But yeah. So what was that? How much did that differ? Because I also have an interest in it. It seems like something that you're gonna have to go out of your way, unless you have maybe some family members or siblings. Maybe that's some. What was your motivation?
Believe it or not, the parallels with how I've learned any spoken languages are actually very large. So initially, it was just a deep a brief experiment, just to play around, see if there was any interest. And what happened was, I was living in Austin, Texas, for a couple of months. And Austin has a very large school of the deaf, and I happened to be living nearby. So at the time, I wasn't learning a lot of languages through online Skype or Zoom lessons with teachers. So I did rely a lot more on in-person teachers, and I happened to be in the city where I could find them. Nowadays, though, I just have my lessons via video call, because obviously you can have sign language through video call. And what happened was, obviously I didn't speak from day one, but I signed from day one. And I made up some signs that just were completely wrong, and they taught me the correct way to sign it.
Okay.
And the great thing is, you can avoid, like we still say, avoiding English when you're avoiding speaking, because you can sign you can spell the words with your hand. So if I didn't know how to say some word, I would spell it out. I would say, this is my name. And then, they would, we would work from there. And eventually I actually got a sign name, which is really cool. Cause you, when
What's
you're
that? A sign name.
Yeah. Because there's no sign for Benny. You just spell out your name. But what happens is that if a deaf person gives you a sign name, then you're able to use that to kind of help conversations flow a lot quicker. And as it happens, so the sign for Ireland is this. It's for people listening, it's kind of like bending your fingers and putting it to your fist. And that represents, kind of annoyingly, that represents putting a fork in a potato. that's the sign for Ireland. Yeah. Yeah. And then the sign in Texas, because the signs change in some parts of the country, for computer, is to do a letter C and to put it up your arm. So she actually combined the two, and we put this sign of this kind of like fork going into a potato that copies the computer, because I'm a techie Irish guy. And that's how I got my sign name. And I absolutely loved using sign language. There's definitely a unique deaf culture in America for people who both are deaf themselves and what's called CODA, children of deaf adults. And they have this whole subculture that's just so fascinating to me that after I got that initial exposure, I decided I want this to be among my active languages. And it's very much parallel. Like, I signed from day one, even though I didn't speak from day one. And I learned through mistakes, and I got lots of practice, and that's kind of all there is to it.
Oh my God, I didn't even realize. Yeah, because I mean, that's a mnemonic, obviously, in that sense, like type of mnemonic device. Okay, techie dude, Irish dude, let's combine those, that makes a name. Then how much does that happen, obviously someone who is fluent in sign language, when they meet a new person, they spell it out? How quickly does that happen? Because that reminds me of like the kind of like a discussion you might have in certain languages, and it varies all over, which when you're going to go from a formal to informal use of the language, like is it would it be rude of me to have been like, oh, you're the techie Irish dude, you're Benny?
Yeah, you know? No, you that... So you would never, like, upon meeting someone, you would never give them their sign name.
No,
you know. This was only after my deaf teacher, I had been seeing her for a whole month almost every single day, that she gave me a sign name. And it's more appropriate that it's somebody within the community who kind of knows you, at least to a certain extent, gives you that name. And you know, when you first meet people, it's fine to just say, you know, my name, Benny, and then that's it. Mm. You're just signing it very quickly, and that's all there is to it. It's just, it works better when, because sign language is a very expressive language for telling stories and such, so it just flows better if you're telling a story about two people and you happen to have a sign for one of those people. And something you were saying earlier that can feel intimidating to people, like if they're getting exposure to some language and it can feel like gibberish. And this definitely has happened to me, that I'll turn on the news and it's just absolutely impossible to understand. But a very big difference is when you are interacting one-to-one with somebody, whether that be in person or via a video call, that person is aware that you're a learner. So they're going to intentionally make their language easier to understand. And that was the case in sign language, that if I look at a video on YouTube of two deaf people signing between one another, because my sign language isn't at a fluent level yet, I really struggle to understand it. But when my teacher signs to me, she knows to adjust and to do it slower. When my teachers of other languages that I'm a beginner in know, they know I'm a beginner, so they're going to enunciate their words a lot easier for me. They're going to intentionally use words that maybe may not be as natural, but they're words that are perhaps loan words or cognates, sure, with English that they know I'm going to get.
So you can comprehend.
And that helps me a lot. It helps ease me in, even if it's not 100% natural. It is this kind of stepping stone towards gradually understanding more and more and more.
Yeah. That's cool, man. I don't know when I feel myself going down that road. I've definitely dabbled and looked and just been like, that's really cool. Like, you mean, so they don't open their mouth, they don't have to do anything, they can just sign. How intelligible are different languages from signing to
a lot of people are surprised by this, but the same parallels work with spoken language, that effectively British sign language is pretty much incomprehensible to American sign language. I mean, not to the full extent. There are certain signs that are always going to be visual, but they're nothing alike. They're not based on the same baseline. Whereas
they can't have a similar conversation. Sorry to cut you there.
No, you can't. They could probably, with a bit of work, they could get the gist of one another. But interestingly, American Sign Language is actually developed based upon French Sign Language. So a deaf French person and a deaf American, and as it happens, also a deaf Irish person, because Irish Sign Language is based on French Sign Language too, we'll all be able to have conversations in similar veins to how as a Portuguese person and a Spanish person could get by pretty well with one another, you know? Yeah. Whereas British Sign Language was developed separately. So there are certain things that visually will be comprehensible, but for the most part, it's just like spoken language, that they just happen to develop separately and independently to one another.
Yeah. That's, I met the both captain for the men and women's deaf national team for football, and it was really cool getting to know them, because that's an experience also that I just find incredible. The loss of a sense during what I obviously would take for granted while being on the field, and I've also gotten a chance to know some of the Paralympic guys within the U.S. Men's national team as well, and some of them have, you know, the visual impairments, and to just think how they're able to do some of the things that they do, and it's natural. And I would also wonder how difficult it is for some of, because some of them were not deaf from birth, some of them had accidents, some of them military, and I find all that fascinating. But I did have one last other question, because you did talk about dead languages. So to Latin or not to Latin at all? Do you, there's this, if you learn Latin or if you study Latin, well, great. All of these will be so
No. If somebody cares about Latin, like if they have some kind of a historical interest, then by all means, go and learn Latin. I'm not going to take a dump on Latin in particular. But yeah, Latin, yeah. If you want to speak several Romance languages, don't learn Latin. Latin is more complex grammatically. Latin has a lot of grammatical features that have died off in all Romance languages. So you're going to be learning a lot of complicated structures that you don't need. The only reason it really helps is for the common vocabulary. But in that case, learn any one of the Romance languages, and that'll give you a leg up on the other ones. But definitely don't learn Latin for the purposes of learning other languages, because as well as it not being practical, it means that your experience is going to suck because you don't care about Latin. You're learning it so that maybe later you'll learn another language that might help you a bit. And with that, you have to care about the project. There has to be some true passion to it. So I would never say, like, if you want to plan two or three languages ahead to learn this one first. No. Whatever, pick what you're most passionate about and learn that language, and that'll make it more practical for you, and that'll help you learn skills to become a better language learner, which will then help you much more in your next language, even if it's completely different. By learning Spanish, you are going to become a better learner of Japanese, even though Japanese has nothing necessarily in common with Spanish. You're going to learn how to gain these skills to acquire vocabulary faster, to get over making mistakes, and all of these many other things that are ultimately going to make you a better language learner.
Yeah, the pattern recognition that I noticed when learning new languages is phenomenal. The ability that that's like this, and I can immediately group that into this section of my brain and I can work through it, even if it's slightly wrong. And it seems maybe possibly even confusing for people to think that. But once I notice a new pattern in something that I'm trying to understand in another language, and I can lump that with, that's like German grammar, kind of, you almost have skipped a very hard learning curve, because it's not foreign to you. It's now like this thing. And that's huge. So last question, because we definitely got to go because it's just our time. Two languages at once, could you do that? Even if they're not related?
I personally wouldn't recommend that to people. What you did after you had already learned Spanish, you went to Italian. That's practical because you could already speak Spanish. But to start two languages from scratch from the beginning, I know a few people who've done it, but you need to have a certain natural skill set that I don't have, and that I think a lot of people would struggle with. That effectively, if you want to become a polyglot, the only way I think that you can do it practically is to focus 100% of your energy on just one language until you get that to a fluent level, and then focus 100% of your energy on another language until you get that to a good level, and then maybe have some maintenance where you're able to use both languages. But focus is the key here. So the only way I've gotten to where I am now is by very long stretches of pure focus on just one language, success, one after the other.
Exactly. Yeah, and consistently, obviously. So, all right, man. Well, thank you for being here. Guys, check out everything that Benny has got. That's obviously going to be right down below. We'll link out to all the other stuff. Thanks, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, and I've got an email list of people sign up to that. I'll give them a crash course on how to speak a language in a week that I think people will find very helpful. And that's for free, absolutely, of course. So come check that out. And otherwise, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. Guys, we will link to all of that in the email list right down below or somewhere around here. All right. See you guys later. Peace.